welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Labor Day, Monday, September 2nd, 2024. Some widows in South Sudan say they are not able to feed their children.
A jar of maize or millet should have been at 2,000 South Sudan pound or 3,000 South Sudan pound. People without money cannot survive. Also, if you have someone who is sick, they cannot be treated because there are no drugs in the hospital. There is no law here.
And a South Sudan nonprofit is advocating for women involvement in politics.
By raising education, giving the children education, educating the girls, because girls are the powerful foundation of the women. When we educate them of their right, when we give them opportunities, they are the future leaders and the future representative of the women.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some widows in South Sudan's eastern Equatorial state are calling on the government of South Sudan to rescue vulnerable families who are not able to feed their children because of the country's hyperinflation that has led to skyrocketing prices in markets across South Sudan. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa has more from Torit.
A 2024 global population report indicates that South Sudan has a poverty rate of 82.3%, the highest in the world. This is an increase from 51% in 2009 and 66% in 2015 because of the hyperinflation and conflict. Mary Paul, a widow in Torit Town, says the government should stabilize the exchange rate of U.S. dollar against South Sudanese pounds to help traders import more goods at affordable prices.
If the government is thinking about us, maybe it will help us, because all we need is help from the government as widows.
Lily Tarapia is another widow in Torit's high-income residential area. She says she is struggling to feed her seven children, adding that the country's hyperinflation has made life difficult.
Life those days in 2005 was not like this. Life was better. People used to get salary of 3,000 South Sudan pounds only, and it was enough. A sack of maize was at 300 South Sudan pounds, a sack of sugar at 150 South Sudan pounds, and a jerry can of oil at 50 South Sudan pounds. The money was enough to buy all these things, and you still remain with some money for other things like women contributions and paying school fees for the children. We used to eat three times a day. But now with the inflation in the country, it has ruined everything. Sometimes even getting porridge is hard and we go to bed hungry.
A study by Tufts University found that widows and their children in South Sudan face severe economic insecurity, including difficulties providing for the basic needs of their children. Some widows are inherited by their husbands, brothers to continue producing children. Rose Adong Marcelo, a widow in Numerari village in Torit, says the situation in the country has overwhelmed some single mothers whose husbands have died.
A jar of maize or millet should have been at 2,000 South Sudan pound or 3,000 South Sudan pound. People without money cannot survive. Also, if you have someone who is sick, they cannot be treated because there are no drugs in the hospital. There is no law here. This is why we ran to the refugee camp in the first place. But we decided to come back. But nothing has changed. So we, the widows, will die with our children if nothing is done.
Mary Paul says before the rise in inflation, she used to stock food for her children, which is enough for three meals per day. But now even getting a meal is hard, and she is calling on the government of South Sudan to intervene to save lives. The conflict in Sudan has crippled South Sudan's oil industry, driving the country into bankruptcy. The governor of the Bank of South Sudan says the country's foreign reserves have dried up. Families across South Sudan are struggling to feed their families. Government employees have not received their salaries for 10 months, leading to abandoned government offices in Juba, 10 states, and the three administrative areas. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from the capital of Eastern Equatorial State, Torit.
Still on women issues, a group calling itself the National Press Club has launched a campaign to stop violence against women and encourage their political participation in South Sudan. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Kwart reports from Malakal.
The National Press Club, a national NGO, says it has received funds from the group UN Women's Peacebuilding for training women in the state to take up leadership positions. Nyarwan Gabriel Tang, the field officer for National Press Club in Malakal, says communities in the state have not invested in girls' education.
By raising education, giving the children education, educating the girls, because girls are the powerful foundation of the women. When we educate them of their right, when we give them opportunities, they are the future leaders and the future representative of the women.
Deng Michael Yor, the paramount chief of Malakal County, says women in Upper Nile State and across the country need support to achieve their dreams.
I also urge government of Upper Nile State, in the prison of the Honorable Minister of Peacebuilding and the Acting Right Honorable Speaker, and the prison of everyone here, UN agencies and the international organizations, to support youth and women skill experience by the opening of Malakal Vocational Training Center, VTC, full-time.
Women are underrepresented in leadership positions in the government, which is below the 35% minimum required by the Revitalized Agreement on the Resolution of the Conflict in the Republic of South Sudan. Last year, only 26 of the 100 members of the Council of State were women, and 171 of the 550 members of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly were women. Fadia Chow, the spokesperson of the Women's Caucus in Upper Nile State's Parliament, says young girls should be given opportunities to develop their talents.
The women of Upper Nile need more support and empowerment to participate in government. Also, we need to encourage young girls to participate among leaders and motivate them by highlight successful models of women leadership, organizing events to exchange experience among women leadership, also provide platforms for young girls to discuss political issues, development of training program by establishing training program to develop women leadership skills, organizing workshops to raise awareness of the importance of women present in politics.
South Sudan has relatively high female political participation in comparison to other African countries. Currently, 29% of parliamentary seats are held by women. However, the number of women as governors and ministers are disproportionately very low. For VOA News, I am Amira Bramquart, reporting from Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
One in 200 polio infections leads to irreversible paralysis. That's according to WHO Africa. Among those paralyzed, about 5 to 10% die once their muscles become immobilized. World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa says cross-border coordination, vaccinating children, and leveraging technology are key to success against polio. Mourinho Jambo reports from Sacramento.
There were at least 204 polio variants detected in 21 African countries this year. The World Health Organization African region says since August of 2022, there has been no new type 1 polio cases detected on the continent. Mashidiso Moeti is the regional director for WHO Africa. She says member states should address the ongoing threat of polio in the region.
In May this year, the transmission of wild poliovirus type 1 imported into Malawi and Mozambique was halted. Africa did what it does best. We united, we mobilized and responded with strength and determination using our well-known tools robust surveillance, quality vaccination campaigns, and increased community engagement, of course, with the strong support of our partners.
Moyeti says the fight against polio is faced by threats, among them insecurity, the displacement of people and food insecurity, intensified by demographic pressures and climate change.
The ongoing international spread of polio, most recently to Gaza, is a stark reminder that polio still continues, constitutes a public health emergency of international concern. The road to zero polio in Africa now requires focused action on variant poliovirus outbreaks. This battle continues, particularly in the Lake Chad Basin, the Sahel, and Eastern Africa, where we've seen persistent transmission of the variant poliovirus. Our work to end all forms of polio continues as we navigate a complex landscape of interconnected threats.
Despite the milestones achieved, the Lake Chad Basin countries and Sahel regions are still facing challenges in fighting the virus. The coordinator of the polio eradication program in the African region, Jamal Ahmed, says the main agenda is to get under control the type 2 polio that is predominantly in the region.
We have another virus that is going around. It's heavily centered in DRC and other places. We are variant polio virus type 1. And if I look at the last 12 months where we have been, the number of cases in the last 6 months are 86% less than they were in the preceding 6 months. We have reduced the number of cases by 79%. We have environmental surveillance. The number of detections have come down by 99%. This is thanks to three countries, primarily Mozambique, Malawi, and Madagascar.
Over 60 million children in Africa were vaccinated against the type 2 polio variant. Ahmed says among the continent's challenges in the fight are vaccine supply and shortages. He says cross-border coordination is key to ensure no child misses out on the vaccine.
Where you see polio in Africa is where we have systems that are not working somehow. When we see an outbreak of polio or many of our other VPD diseases, it means that something has not worked in our routine immunization program, in our broad health systems. So it's really a program about reaching those tough areas, those communities that we don't reach.
It is estimated that at least 168,000 cases of polio occur in Africa each year. Children under the age of 5 are the most affected by polio globally. WHO Africa calls on the global health community to rally and eradicate polio and urges member states to speed up the response to outbreaks. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, are you prepared to tackle challenges of artificial intelligence? Stay tuned for an answer to that question after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Bernard Avle hosts one of the biggest morning shows in Ghana, but scammers use artificial intelligence or AI to clone his voice to endorse a product. Analysts are warning that the same technology could be used to spread disinformation ahead of Ghana's elections in December. For VOA News, Sinanu Todd reports from Accra.
Your financing conditions are not favorable, and you've been forced.
From the studios of City FM in Accra, Bernard Avle's voice reaches tens of thousands of Ghanaians every weekday. Along with his team, the radio and TV host engages the nation on the award-winning City Breakfast Show and on his TV show, The Point of View. I use a talk program platform to raise important development issues, but I also use the power of good interviews to question our duty bearers to actually demand for accountability. But that voice of accountability has been hijacked. Somebody called me and said, Bernard, I'm calling to check on the sex enhancement medicine that you discussed on your TV show last week. And I was like, whoa, what are you talking about? Avla says perpetrators used artificial intelligence tools to clone his voice and show, then broadcast it on Facebook. To make it authentic, they used his show's introduction.
Welcome to The Point of View. This is your favorite current affairs show on television. Here on the...
But instead of talking about current affairs, the AI version promoted products. This is me they're using. And then a voice that sounds like mine somehow learns how I introduce my show.
The people are coming up with new systems.
Computer scientist and researcher Kweku Andoyamwan notes a surge in deepfake cloning technology since 2022, with tools now easily accessible.
They charge you a dollar, which gives you access to train your clone your voice in like 3 steps. You repeat 3 phrases, and then you have a cloned version of your voice saying anything.
In an election year, the easy access to AI poses a serious threat to Ghana's peace and security, analysts say. During the 2020 election, fake news and misinformation led to unrest, and at least 8 deaths linked to political violence were recorded. Some worry that cloning technologies could make the situation worse this year. CTFM has already seen increased disinformation. It says perpetrators are using the media outlet's brand and credibility to spread disinformation. For this reason, CTFM is introducing security features to flag fake news and clone content in their widely circulated photos and stories. Using QR code technology, audiences can easily verify images. It is also piloting a fact-checking project funded by the Danish Embassy in partnership with the Ghana Center for Democratic Development. It brings together forensic and investigative journalists.
And then we are going the step further of also getting tech involved, combating it, and actually showing proof of the behind the scenes of actually we getting the verification of those disinformation content.
Alongside fact-check initiatives in Ghana are calls for greater public education in media literacy and the detection of fake media in the run-up to elections. Sena Anutot for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
From Ghana, we go to Middle East, where 6 Israeli hostages were found shot in the head in a tunnel in southern Gaza. Israelis have reacted with shock and anger. Some blame the Israeli government for not reaching a ceasefire deal with the Hamas earlier. Israel's largest labor union announced a general strike starting Monday until the government signs a deal. Linda Grandstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Just days after their families screamed to the hostages on loudspeakers at the Israeli-Gaza border, the Israeli army announced that 6 hostages were found in a tunnel in southern Gaza. The murdered hostages included Hirsch Goldberg Polan, a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Israeli Army spokesman Daniel Hagari says the 6 were murdered by Hamas terrorists shortly before soldiers reached them. He said they had been abducted alive and their bodies were found during combat in the southern Gaza city of Rafah, near where Israeli troops rescued a Bedouin hostage alive last week. The Israeli press says that rescue may have provoked Hamas to kill the 6 hostages, fearing the Israeli soldiers were getting closer. It was also reported that 3 of the 6 killed were set to be released on humanitarian grounds in the first stage of a ceasefire, including Goldberg Polan and 2 women. In mass demonstrations around the country, protesters say the government is sabotaging a hostage release deal in favor of maintaining a military presence along the Gaza-Egypt border. This policy decision was confirmed by government cabinet ministers a few days ago, and according to Israeli press reports, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledged that their decision likely meant the collapse of negotiations over a hostage deal. But after the killing of the 6 hostages, Netanyahu blamed Hamas for the lack of any hostage deal. Netanyahu said that while Israel is conducting intensive negotiations to deal, Hamas refuses any proposal. He said that anyone who murders hostages does not want a deal. Polls show a majority of the Israeli public supports a ceasefire deal as the only way to release the hostages, even if it means that Hamas is not completely destroyed, according to Gershon Baskin, a longtime Israeli negotiator with Hamas.
The military pressure does not release hostages. 8 hostages were rescued in military operations. There are still 101 hostages in Gaza. If something is learned from what we learned last night when these hostages' bodies were found, is that military pressure will not save them. Military pressure will kill them.
Amid national mourning for the 6 young hostages, Israelis have gone into the streets in mass demonstrations against Netanyahu's military policy and are holding a one-day general strike Monday. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Some Gold Star families expressed support Sunday for former President Donald Trump after he was criticized for taking photos and videos at a restricted section of Arlington National Cemetery last week. Vice President Kamala Harris, who is also in the race for the White House, added her voice to those condemning Trump's visit and deemed it a political stunt. VOA's Veronica Baldras Iglesias has the story.
The Democratic presidential nominee, Vice President Kamala Harris, joined in the criticism of the Trump campaign for taking images last week of the former president's visit to Section 60 of the Arlington National Cemetery. Political activities in that section are strictly forbidden by federal law and Pentagon policies, and thus an altercation with a cemetery employee ensued. On Saturday, Harris addressed the issue in a message on X, formerly Twitter. "Let me be clear. The former president disrespected sacred ground, all for the sake of a political stunt." Trump, the Republican presidential nominee, repeated his counterargument Saturday that he was there at the invitation of relatives of soldiers who died in a terrorist attack during the 2021 U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan.
He said to me, I'm not surprised, I never even thought about it, "Sir, would it be possible for you to have a picture with us by the tombstone of my son?" I said, "Absolutely." I wasn't doing it for, I don't need publicity. I get a lot of publicity.
The Trump campaign released a statement and video clip Sunday by some Gold Star families backing his visit. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham was asked on ABC's This Week show whether he thinks the Trump campaign crossed the line.
"I'm all for looking at what happened. But you know what really is unfortunate? That these families had to go visit their fallen loved ones at Arlington due to incompetence by the Biden administration. Rise in terrorism, combine that with a broken border, another 9/11 is coming our way."
When it comes to securing the border, Harris's vision would prove the most effective, said Colorado Governor Jared Polis. He was asked to clarify if it would include building walls and how it compares to Trump's approach. The Democrat was also interviewed Sunday on ABC.
"The border wall that Donald Trump has proposed is a huge boondoggle and waste of taxpayer money. He effectively talked about a wall across the entire border rather than using barriers of different kinds effectively. Kamala Harris is for is securing it in the most cost-effective way possible."
On the Labor Day holiday Monday, Vice President Harris will campaign in Michigan and Pennsylvania. On Tuesday, her campaign will launch the Fighting for Reproductive Freedom bus tour with a kickoff event in Palm Beach, Florida. The Trump Vance campaign will hold events Tuesday in Braselton, Georgia, and Mesa, Arizona. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
And that's all we had on our menu for you this Monday, September 2nd, 2024. We now leave you with the song Intumwenia Junubin by Emmanuel Lasso. We've been listening to Emmanuel Lasso and the song Into Mwenya Junubin. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Helen, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the first Monday in September, the United States observes Labor Day, a celebration of its workers and their contributions to the successes of the United States. In the words of President Joe Biden, the middle class built the United States, and labor unions built the middle class. There is a lot of truth to that statement. In the late 1860s, machines began to replace manual labor in rural areas but created new jobs in the industrial cities of the country's northeast. And so, men returning from the Civil War battlefields abandoned the countryside to find work in fast-growing industrial cities. At the same time, wave after wave of immigrants arrived, primarily from Europe, looking for work and new opportunities. But those opportunities proved elusive as industrial workers by the thousands labored in factories, steel mills, and mines 12 hours per day, 7 days a week, frequently under harsh, even dangerous conditions. And at the end of the day, their wages were barely enough to make ends meet. So they joined labor unions. As membership grew, so did the union's ability to negotiate better salaries and improve working conditions. They organized marches and, when necessary, strikes. In preparation for one such demonstration of strength in numbers, which took place on September 5, 1882, 10,000 New York City workers took unpaid leave and marched from City Hall to a nearby park, thus taking part in the first so-called working man's holiday. This idea of a day to celebrate everyday workers gained traction, and similar marches continued every year. Finally, 12 years later, on June 28, 1894, the U.S. Congress enacted a law to make Labor Day a national holiday to be observed on the first Monday in September. In the words of President Grover Cleveland, who signed the bill into law, a truly American sentiment recognizes the dignity of labor and the fact that honor lies in honest toil. On Labor Day, we honor that essential truth and the dedication and dignity of American workers who power our nation's prosperity, said President Biden in a written statement. On Labor Day, we stand in solidarity with all the workers who lift our nation to new heights and all the labor unions who give all workers power and voice.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.